Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn Bridge.
Hey, welcome to How's New York with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe. Tonight is our monthly news recap, and we're going to look back on the top news stories from Brooklyn real estate in the month of November. Stay tuned for Bob.
And lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home, the good old Brooklyn.
Hi, this is Howe's New York with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe, and here is our host as always, Robert Howe.
Well, welcome everyone, and thank you, Jason, to Howe's New York. I'm your host again, Robert Howe, and as always, we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community, politics, and any hot topics of the day. We're broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Oswego, Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. I'm here with my executive producer, Jason Versace of Rising Tide Marketing. And as Jason mentioned, tonight is our monthly recap where we talk about all of the good and positive stories about what is happening in our wonderful borough of Brooklyn and County of Kings. So what do you have for us tonight, Jason?
Well, we say this all the time, and it's true once again. You know, just when you think you've seen it all, you've heard it all, or you don't think there's going to be a new entry into Brooklyn real estate related or Brooklyn industry related news, comes a story from the Brooklyn Eagle. I thought this was a really interesting story, even though it's been a long, long time since I partook in video game playing. But esports comes to Brooklyn with a professional esports franchise, a competitive video game playing franchise. I'm aware that professional video gaming is a thing, and that I assume it's growing in more and more in popularity. But here, just another industry coming to Brooklyn. This really took me by surprise.
I looked at the article and I thought maybe we had a misplaced link or something along the way, but I guess in reporting about what's going on in Brooklyn, we have to mention things that are going on retail as well as you know, residential and commercial. And here, who would have thunk that we had a gaming store in the borough? And not only do we have the gaming store, but we are going to have one of a very competitive competition tournament coming up every weekend up and through December 3rd. So this is a really interesting aspect of, you know, what's going on in Brooklyn. And I don't know, you're a little closer to this this category than I am, Jason, so I need you to help me out on some of this story. It looks like, I guess, you know, probably 20 or so, or 40 maybe people in a room playing a video game and video games against each other. And, you know, tell me what else is going on here.
Well, it looks like the retail space is based in Borum Hill, and apparently the team will be playing all of its home games. I don't know what a home game is for a video game, a professional video game league or a professional video game contest, but it looks like right now they're in Burbank, but they're in 2020. It looks like they're going to be playing all of their home games in New York City. The thing that really jumped out at me is that they mentioned that the Brooklyn's team had a tremendous year. They were 34-6, but they got upset by the Philadelphia team and did not make it to the I guess the championships or the finals, which were held in the Barclays Center. So it was an event big enough to take place at the Barclays Center, which is a pretty swanky event space and pro sports league space, and right in downtown Brooklyn. So that really jumped out at me, is that this something like this is big enough to be held at the Barclays Center, and that, you know, it's just another thing for Brooklyn, another feather in Brooklyn's cap. We've got this new industry coming in here, and an event of that magnitude that's actually being held at the Barclays Center. So I thought there's some influx of new money here, I think, into the marketplace and the businesses down in that area that may support this growing industry.
Yes, and as we're chatting, I'm looking at the company Sterling Equities, listed on the internet as a fully integrated real estate operating company. And guess who is the chairman? Fred Wilpon of the New York Mets. So I guess maybe Wilpon is thinking it's easy to get these teenagers who aren't going to get injured and pull hamstrings and Tommy John surgery and underperform and overpaid. It's easy enough to just sit them in front of a video screen and create some type of competitive sporting event without the needs of groundskeepers and people selling beer and driving out to Shea Stadium, or City Field as it's now called. So this is pretty unusual that Wilpon, who's both developing real estate, is also sponsoring this video sporting event. And I'm just looking at the people from you know, that are in this picture that the Brooklyn Eagle is publishing, and they are pretty intense on what's going on their screen. I'm just wondering. So I guess there's a game large enough for dozens or hundreds of people to play simultaneously, and get over on the other person, or get more points. What is the general idea of a video game scoring points, or getting through the end, or getting to higher levels?
I don't. I guess it all depends on the game that they're competing in. I'm sure they play competitions with all different types of game genres. I think the main draw for this for me would be the probably the connection to technology industries, and we've talked about the tech companies that are coming here, and probably a lot of app developers and game developers, and you know, you see the apps for your mobile devices have become such big business and can be developed in a lot of these shared workspaces that we've talked about, and coming into these new developments in downtown Brooklyn where you go to share a workspace and then you work, you go out for drinks and eat after work, and you may even live in an environment that may also be an apartment complex. So the gaming industry seems closely tied to that technology industry, and who knows, Fred Wilpon, I guess, has got to be more pleased with the way his video game team has performed than the Mets have performed. And you could see that these type of spaces and environments can be, you can house events in many smaller environments than a baseball stadium or a football stadium. So
yeah,
it just seems when we talk about the need to carve up space in downtown Brooklyn, or like, what can we develop, or it seems like this is just another creative use of space, it seems, if this is going to be something that's going to be taking place in Brooklyn, and another event, a low-impact event where you don't require a lot of space, but you can almost see these things popping up as maybe even a mobile structure where you can move it all around Brooklyn. It doesn't even have to be, but it's just something that jumped out at me as another new thing going on in Brooklyn. As if we needed something new.
Yeah.
Here it is. Our next story comes from Cranes, and it talks about the cost and the prohibitive cost to raise low-income housing in Brooklyn, as opposed to just refurbishing it, fixing it up, restoring it. And it appears like the findings were that the it's more fiscally feasible to fix these places up and renovate them.
Yeah, you know, that is interesting. There was for a long time the theory that it's easy to knock them down and rebuild them rather than, you know, work with what you have and retrofit them. But, you know, recently with the lead paint scare, not scare, you know, the scandal, I should say, in public housing, where the city and state now have turned to private developers. They understand that they can't, that the city and the state alone cannot tackle this this repair issue with lead paint. They need to go along with private, you know, companies, and I guess these private companies will receive some sort of tax credits, tax abatements, tax reductions, probably also some direct payments. But the city has realized that they alone cannot, do this on their own.
And it looks like it amounts to 15 locations or projects that they're targeted for more than 16,000, almost 16,500 apartments almost, and if they rehab them, it would cost $260,000 per unit versus building new for $410,000 per unit plus additional costs such as demolition and the land acquisition. So it looks like the cost is considerable. So it almost seems like this is a no-brainer if that's the route they're going to take.
Yeah, almost half the price. Of course, you know, if you knock down the whole building, then you got to put, you know, 1,000 people somewhere, and that is definitely the issue. Is they don't have places to put anybody at, you know, at the moment. So I guess they, you know, they're going to do what they did with the Gowanus. They didn't just tear it down and build something else. They just, you know, repaired it, you know, one bolt at a time. So that's what, you know, is going to happen. But the city realized that, you know, they screwed up in the first place, and, you know, they need private industry to help them get out of this pickle that they now find themselves in with, you know, buildings that need huge amounts of repair. And also have unbelievable hazardous conditions, you know, in them.
Our next story is an interesting look at a property. It was from the New York Times, and I, for some reason, I found it interesting yet a little sad, but a little amazing that the people involved in this had such foresight. It has to do with a property that recently came onto the marketplace, a Brooklyn brownstone from 1870 that was purchased in the 1960s and was restored by the owners. But not only did they restore it, they kept a incredibly detailed documentation of their restoration, so much so that it amounted to an almost 150-page book.
Right. The attention to detail in this restoration is incredible, equal to maybe like an archaeological dig in Egypt to find you know, pyramids or pharaohs or artifacts. But they did an incredible job, you know, restoring this. Of course, let's see, they bought it for $29,000. In 1968, so it is, you know, I guess they had some money left over for renovations. Although in 68, that's what houses were going for, you know. Yeah, I mean, that may have been, well, no, they were going in the $20,000 range, probably in the 60s. So they just really bought whatever, you know, the going price was.
It's a nice appreciation. It came onto the market for $2.9 million recently in Carroll Gardens. And if you go to the New York Times story, you'll see some photos of what it looks like now. It's a stunning space. It's great lighting. It's very bright, and you can tell that it was lovingly worked on and kept up by the couple, and it really is interesting. You can see the history of the work, so anybody going in there will know exactly what was done to it, and it's really akin to getting a classic car that was restored to near mint condition.
Yeah, no, they did an incredible job, and this guy apparently was handy enough to do a lot of it, which is helpful. But you know, you're living through 50 years of renovation. That is certainly, you know, no small task, you know, to live through. I'm wondering where they got all of the you know, the information about their house. Where, what archive were they able to tap to get this this information? Or maybe they were just looking at maybe neighbors' properties that had remained somewhat intact.
Maybe a mystery. Who knows?
Yes.
We will. Lost to the ages now. All we have is their 148-page how-to book on, and then what's interesting is that the article also notes that this was well before the do-it-yourself video blogger / blogger phenomenon that's swept the globe. So they, in some ways, a little bit ahead of their time. Our final story is somewhat of a neighborhood / home spotlight from here in Bay Ridge. A very interesting house, very, very pretty house in Bay Ridge, a 1920s Dutch colonial home down on 73rd Street in Bay Ridge Boulevard. It caught my eye, and the amenities inside seem very, very interesting and well-appointed, and just an interesting property in Bay Ridge.
Yes, it looks very well kept, and what do they mean, though, when they say atomic age kitchen? I guess a 60s kitchen?
Exactly my question that I was going to ask you, if you knew what the atomic age kitchen was. I seem to almost think that it's had a knock on it, that it's a kitchen from the 50s and Yucca Flats, maybe, and...
Right, exactly, with sort of tubes and spiral wires,
yeah.
and things of that nature.
I'm looking at the image of the kitchen. I wonder maybe if the design is a retro-looking design. I can't imagine that the appliances are period-specific to the atomic age, but it does look like, if you look at the image of the kitchen, looks like something that could be right out of the 50s. But another space that's very, very light, a lot of light, natural light comes in. The yard looks sensational with the flagstones out back, and the landscaping looks great. So this property, and it looks like they're asking $1.4 million. A really nice looking house.
Yes, and I actually think 1.4 is a little on the low side, I would think, unless
yeah.
it's something that, fully detached with its own garage. I'm thinking in the 1.5 and up, but maybe the 73rd Street location knocked a few dollars
could
off
be.
It. I don't know.
I mean, the street that they show, I know the area is not the that side of... Of Bay Ridge is not as or not as in the 80s, 90s, and 100 streets. But it looks like a nice tree-lined street. I wonder maybe the atomic age came with a lot of radiation. Maybe that's just radiated.
Yes, there wasn't a microwave in there I didn't see, but that would have done nicely. But you know what also is interesting about this article is that the first paragraph reflects, what just recently happened in Bay Ridge politics of...
It does.
I don't know how that got molded into, atomic age kitchens, so maybe they're trying to, link... 2018 with 1950, 1960 with 1920, three levels of experience that this house has lived through, and God forbid now they live in a once Republican stronghold just flipped
yeah.
to Democrats. I don't know.
It was a very curious way. First sentence and was once a. Well, now that we wiped out that plague of republicanism, we've got now you can come in and get this great house. It was an odd way to open up a piece about property.
Yeah, so they do mention the bohemian canvassers that swamped our neighborhood pre-election, which is true. There were a lot of people from outside the neighborhood canvassing. Will that be the cause of our, housing boom out here? Is that all these bohemian types came in and said, what a beautiful place this is? Although I don't think they could afford the 1.3 or 1.4, but maybe they went home and told the trustees of their trust about these properties, and that will help boost the price.
It does seem like a strange correlation to try and make, because you think that maybe they're targeting millennials or young urban professionals, but the price tag seems to be a little out of whack, and also the location doesn't seem to jive with where they are currently living and working. You don't hear many of the influx of young professionals who are coming here for the new industry saying, oh, I'm going to move into this nice family house in the suburbs.
And of course, they end with a comment, like an L train type comment, the 14 stop R train, a ride to Whitehall South Ferry, the first stop in Manhattan. So, a little remark related to why the Williamsburgs and the L trains are so popular. You know, one or two stops here in Manhattan. Here you have 14 stops. But I think that's plenty of time to, read your emails and listen to a few songs or blogs or podcasts, I should say, not blogs, podcasts on your phone. I think, a 14-stop R-train ride isn't really the worst in the world. You get to do a lot of other things, meditate, sleep, people watch, read your emails, do a lot of other things. So. And then you do end up in Bay Ridge, which is a little small town in a big city. Many people say
a nice place to wind up. And with that, we're wrapping up our recap episode for November 2018. As the holidays are upon us now, we have had some interesting stories. Why don't you take us out, Bob?
Yeah, so we had, an eclectic mix of stories. I'm trying to find the common thread of video games, invade Brooklyn to it's cheaper to renovate what you got than knock it down. And then if you have 60 years to renovate your house, you can buy a fixer-upper. And then a little touch about politics and three different stages of life that this Dutch colonial has existed through, in for sale in the Bay Ridge area. Well, this could, if there's a thread in there, you can tell me. Well, this concludes tonight's radio program, and thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show. This is our monthly recap for November 2018. This is Howes New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I am your host, Robert Howe.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge.